Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to Mindful Mud. I am Florina Nickley. I'm your host. I'm a Zen teacher and a mindfulness instructor. Thank you, KMUD, Community Powered Radio, for hosting this show. And right now, we will have, on Mindful Mud, I have five guests, you all. Four guests. I count myself as a guest. Here we go. I have four guests, and our topic for today is how to deal with back-to-school anxiety for parents and for kids. It's a topic that came up, and I've been running into teachers and kids and parents alike, and it's really buzzing now. You know, school starts pretty soon here in California, especially around here. Some school starts in a week, 2-3 weeks. So a lot of people are starting to think about going back to school and what does that mean, and perhaps some have a first experience of going to school, either from homeschooling or as a pre-K or kindergartner or whatever it is, right? It's a lot of new beginnings out there, and that can induce some fear, some anxiety, some nervousness. And I have wonderful folks here with me, and we're holding it down today. And you can actually call in with questions, comments for this topic. So, yeah. We will open the phone lines pretty soon here. All right, I think let's just dive in. Welcome, you all. Again, we have a whole Zoom roundtable. And I have ladies on that I studied a lot of mindful schools with. So all experts in just how to deal with big emotions, how to deal with kids, how to deal with to be a parent ourselves. We're all parents here. So, and different age groups. So, a wonderful thing. Let's go around. Who wants to get started? Just your name, introduce yourself, where you're calling in from, and a couple sentences about your professional background. That would be lovely. Welcome, you all. Go for it, Melanie.
I'm Melanie. I'm calling in from New York. I'm starting my 30th year of teaching this year, both elementary and secondary levels, and I am the owner of Slice of Mindfulness.
Thank you, Melanie. Who wants to go next? Go for it, Rebecca.
Good morning. My name is Rebecca Eller. I am calling in from just outside of Madison, Wisconsin, and I have like 30 years of experience as a physical therapist, yoga teacher, and mindfulness teacher. Working with kids and families to increase their resilience and independence in the sometimes wild and crazy world that we live in.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome. Holly.
Hi, I'm Holly Lees. I'm from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and I have about 9-10 years of experience teaching mindfulness along with the arts. I work for a program called BottleWorks, running mindfulness and arts-based programming in schools. I'm primarily in middle school right now, and I have two young kids starting preschool and first grade.
So you're one of those parents, right? With
I'm
beginners.
In it. Yeah. I think.
Excellent. And with Susan.
Susan Finn from St. John's in Newfoundland and Labrador in Canada, and I have taught for 15 plus years, kind of lost track, but mainly with young ones, grade one, grade two, and I've also helped with kids in grade 4, 5, and 6, so I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah, so we have like all of us share like a huge variety of ages at home with kids, right? And then also working with different kind of age groups. And I really want to encourage folks from the community to call in with like your concerns of going back to school, no matter how old your kids are. So I'm going to actually give the number out already, 707-923-3911. And Sheila will put you on the air with your question. Yeah, use this time. We would love to hear from you. So perhaps just a simple question, but like, why do you even think that transitioning to going back to school can be anxiety inducing? What's your thought there? Like, what's going on? Like, what's the process? Yeah, Rebecca.
I just think there's a lot of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And anytime we're faced with uncertainty, our bodies and minds kind of put up a defense and fear kicks in and anxiousness. And I think a lot of people even just feel it once August hits, right? Teachers, parents, kids, all of a sudden you start to feel it in your body. Maybe your thoughts start spiraling or you're worrying about the year. But there's always a lot of great things that go along with that.
And it's so easy, right, to focus on the negative, to focus mm-hmm. on the anxiety and forget about all the good things that we might look forward to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Holly, what do you think?
I'm speaking mainly as a parent here, but I, you know, noticing that the way that our school systems are set up, there's a lot of unknown. We don't know who our kids' teachers are going to be. I just found out yesterday. You know, and we go back next week and we don't know what their days are really going to look like. And we don't know who the people are that are going to be caring for them all day long and what their value systems are like. And thinking about it, you know, my 4-year-old starting preschool, which is not a public school system. And I feel like I had a little more choice in choosing that, obviously. But then when they hit public school, you know, I spent all these years carefully choosing who's going to be around my kids and making decisions about that and like really feeling into it. Do I trust these people to watch my baby? And then they go to school and we really don't have any control over who they're with all day or who's going to love them or who's going to like pick up their lunch when it falls. And we just have no control over those things. And it gives a lot of anxiety. So.
Such a good point, Holly. Like, and I'm just thinking really about, oh, what could like the schools do different to support, right? Or how can we like have more communication perhaps? I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here in the way of to reduce that anxiety because nobody, the teachers, the schools, they don't want anxious kids. They don't want anxious parents, right? And so how can we support that more of like, perhaps knowing earlier, perhaps having, right? All these things. And again, it's a lot on schools too, but I love that aspect. I've never thought about that, right? We just don't know as parents. And that is, yeah, and we parents, we're mama bears, right? We want the best. And yeah, deep breath there. Good point, Holly. Yeah. Melanie?
And the opposite end of the spectrum from what Holly said is I'm going to be dropping off my 19-year-old baby at college this year as a college freshman and talk about unknown and talk about, you know, worry and being far away. And also what Holly said, it made me think like as a teacher, maybe recording a video, a welcome video for my incoming students would be something that could set not only them at ease, but their families at ease and just sometimes connecting a face to the name, right? We're on a website, our names are up there, the room number, but putting, you know, a face and a voice and just a little introduction that would take a very short time could possibly ease that unknown and that, you know, scariness of it for kids and parents.
Great idea. I hope a lot of teachers out there are listening right now. Yeah, what a great idea. A little video. A little, hello, welcome, this is me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I kind of already feel it in my body, kind of like what you're saying, right? It's that no matter what the transition is, it's scary. It's like the unknown. It's how can we trust in that? How can we... And I think we don't have to necessarily be okay, you know, in the way of like, everything's fine, but really how can we hold these feelings in a genuine way for ourselves and with the kids? What do you think about that? Yeah, Rebecca.
I just think it's important for us to remember that it's okay to be vulnerable, right? And it's okay to have these big feelings, and it's great to talk about them and not feel like we have to fix them. You know, when we're vulnerable, I mean, that's really where creativity and joy and love and everything sprouts from vulnerability, if we can allow ourselves to be there. And I once was with a group of mindfulness, in our mindfulness training, and we talked about uncertainty and looking at, you know, instead of the fear of uncertainty, can we look at the possibility? Because there's so much growth that's going to occur, right? And there's so much newness and excitement, and it's hard to look ahead and feel confident about that. But if we can remind ourselves that our perspective plays a big role in how we're able to manage those big feelings, right? And can we change our perspective? Can we step out of the fear and look into possibility? Be curious and be kind and look for that awe. Like, wow, I get to have a new teacher. And then if it's not great, you know, I look at it as a parent looking back. I have three teenagers. One is in college. One's in middle school and one's a senior in high school. And they've been through a lot. And sometimes as a parent, it is so hard to watch failure, struggle, not being treated fairly, not getting, you know, like there's, but that's life, right? Getting cut from the team their senior year, not being able to play because you didn't show up in a certain way, all kinds of, you know, things, new teachers that are harder than the last teacher and have too high of expectations. And now you're failing a class that you were passing it with straight A, you know, a month ago. You know, these are maybe little problems for little people, right? But they're big problems for those people, those little people. And it's good for them to go through these experiences. And it's good for parents to allow them and just hold their hand and allow the big feelings to come and not try to fix everything, because really you're helping them learn these skills that they're going to have to use the rest of their lives. Right?
That honesty, right?
Yeah.
That honesty of like, yeah, things are hard sometimes and I'm still here for you. And the same thing, I think sometimes we have to give ourselves in order to give to the kids, that if we have a hard time, can I show up with that? And then I can show up with the kids as well when they have a hard time. And I think one of the hardest things is when we try to just push problems or difficulties under the rug, right? I think that is really way more damaging than the problem itself, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Rebecca. And there's so many different things, right, that can happen. And, you know, you bring up that idea of refraining, right, changing position, seeing things differently from anxiety to possibility. And when we are in an anxious state, our nervous system is not possible to do, has no possibility to do that. So how can we shift out of that fearful state? I know you all have good ideas about that.
I think it's really important to give kids and parents the language and the vocabulary of what the emotions are, and then to connect it to what the body's doing to send and to communicate that message to them. So if they are, a lot of times I'll ask a student, you know, how are you? And they're like, fine, good. And it's very generic answers. But when we look deeper in and we start questioning them, well, no, I'm feeling nervous. How do you know? Because my stomach feels like butterflies. And teaching them that language, a lot of times it's really hard, especially for middle schoolers to make that connection. I like to give them the example of, you know, what does your body do to let you know that you're hungry? Oh, my stomach growls, or I get a headache. And just having that communication, and that parents can have the example of what happens in their body when different emotions come up. Lots of times, parent and child, it's the same kind of reaction. So I think increasing the vocabulary, expanding the way that we communicate about emotions, normalizing that these are feelings that when we acknowledge and accept them, they will pass, right? We know about the brain science of mindfulness, and is that almost like Dan Siegel's Name It to Tame It. When we name that emotion, the amygdala kind of slows down, and then we can be in a place to make a more mindful response. So yeah, just giving kids and parents and teachers the vocabulary and then connecting it to what the body's actually doing to communicate that, I think is super helpful.
Such a good point, because the body's a big part of it. Yeah.
And I put a shout out for Dan Siegel's book, The Whole Brain Child, because that's such a great book, and it's an easy read. And it has some really simple tools for parents, like Name It to Tame It and Listening, Not Fixing. And just, it's really great.
Yeah, I'm so glad you bring that up, Rebecca, the whole, and you too, Melanie, about there are so many tools out there, right? And sometimes we just need the tools, like, we need them desperately because without them, we're pretty lost. So a whole brain child really has helped me a lot, because it's so practical and it's so neuroscience based, and it really, really works. Right. And that is for more younger kids. So if you have a teenager, I would actually recommend another book, the Brainstorm book by Dan Siegel, which helped me again so much. Read it right before your kid becomes a teenager. And probably even, you know, because it really has saved me a lot of problems with my child going through teenage years, of just kind of preparing us both. Like, I sometimes even read passages out to him out loud. I'm like, so if I feel like if I'm going to turn into a dragon here in a couple months, this is what's happening. That kind of stuff, and having more fun with it. So knowing more about neuroscience for me has really turned this whole parenting challenge into more of a play and more of a like, okay, let's try this. And I felt more resourced. So thank you, Rebecca, for sharing that. Yeah, those two books are, I think, really life-saving sometimes as a parent. And I'm not normally so much into parent helping books, because a lot of them I think haven't actually helped me a lot. But those two are really, really beautiful. So anyway, thanks for sharing. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to Mindful Mud on KMUT. And I'm here with Holly, Susan, Rebecca, and Melanie. And we have a whole roundtable talking about back to school and what that means, especially those difficult emotions that can come up with it. Yeah. So connecting the emotion with the body, right? And I hear you, Melanie, because when we can feel it in the body, we can start having ownership over it, right? Yeah, we can not just intellectually knowing that we're anxious, it's not going to help us a whole bunch. Yeah, but if we know, oh, my heart is going close, my stomach is going close, whatever that means, it's like, okay, I can breathe in there. I can be with that. And then it shifts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, go for it, Rebecca.
I was just wondering if maybe we should do a little quick little practice, because
let's do it.
I discovered this breath. There's lots of breathing techniques out there, and this just relates to Melanie talking about the body and the brain, and how when we're in high emotions, we can't really think straight. Well, how do we shift? How do we shift from a high emotion state to a calmer state? And so I teach all kinds. There's a ton of breathing techniques out there, but the kids really seem to gravitate towards this one called the quick calm breath. And so we're all just going to breathe together. And so we'll start with an exhale.
Rebecca, why don't we, would you lead that practice?
Yes.
I think we have a couple callers. Let's put those on first.
Okay.
And then go to the practice. How about that?
Sounds great.
Okay. Wonderful. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, that's lovely. It's Maureen. And when you're an airwaves go forever beyond the nearest star. And what I wanted to say, I forget the comment that, like, tame something. But I was very gratified when somebody who hears me on KMUD all the time, I didn't know him that well, and he came up to me and he said, you know, people turn the radio up when you get on the air. And he said, you're wild. And I thought, I like being wild. I don't want to be tamed.
All right. There we go.
I know.
Yeah, being wild is a good thing. Do you have a question for us, Maureen?
I don't have a question. I have a statement that I'm so glad that women are, you know, I don't like the word control, but more like in charge now. There are more feminine voices that are out in the world now, like yours.
Thank you.
And yours. And I'm very grateful for that, and we all are. That's about it, loves.
Lovely.
Next caller.
I love being wild with you, Maureen.
Yeah, thank you, sweetheart.
All right. Have a good day. And next caller, I don't think we have another caller. So, but if you do like to call in and would like to, ask us a question or perhaps share a certain concern you have about going back to school or whatever is on your mind about going back to school, give us a call, 707-923-3911. Okay, would love to hear from you. Rebecca, let's do a little practice.
All right. Okay, so we're going to practice the quick calm breath. And what I like about it is it kind of mimics some of our natural tendencies. So what we're going to do is we'll practice a few times so we get the hang of it. We're going to go ahead. Let's exhale together. Inhale through your nose. Pause for a second and then add an additional sniff or an additional inhale. And then exhale, sigh. Okay. When you sigh, just kind of let everything go. Let your jaw relax, your shoulders. So we do this naturally as humans, right? When we need to relax sometimes and we're overwhelmed, we're like, right? We're sighing. So we're putting this, we're adding some juice to this. Okay. So let's exhale together. Inhale through your nose if you're able to do that. Otherwise, through your mouth is fine. Stop where you might naturally and then add an additional little inhale and then exhale, sigh. When you're sighing, relax everything. Let go. Just let go. Right? We hold on to so much. The focus is on letting go. We'll do one more for good measure. I like odd numbers. All right. Let's breathe out together. Breathe in. Pause a little bit more. And then exhale, sigh. Another little natural tendency is if you think about a kid crying, right? A lot of time, or an adult, right? It's like, and then, so isn't this just amazing how amazing our human body is? Like we just naturally know what to do. So we're just being really purposeful about it, right? And we're adding some juice to it and some energy to make it a little more useful for us. So anytime you can extend your inhalations and extend your exhalations, even just a little bit longer than your inhalations, you're going to trigger that parasympathetic, peaceful nervous system. It's going to help bring you back to a moment of reality where you can use your thinking brain again. Like Melanie said, you calm your amygdala. So I hope that's helpful for us as radio show hosts to regroup and be present, and also for our listeners out there to try and to use with your kids as well.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah, Suzanne?
And as you're talking about that, one thing that comes to mind is that sometimes when kids are overstimulated or upset or whatever the case may be, like those steps don't come naturally, right? So the more you practice ahead of time in just everyday activities, the more ready you'll be if you need it. And sometimes too, if a child needs like a temperature change, can kind of help your nervous system regulate if you have like a little cold pack in your lunch bag or whatever the case may be, get a drink of water. Like those are tools that kids could really benefit from if, you know, they want to have a whole bunch of tools readily accessible. Breathing is one of them. You're in control of your breathing. If you have practiced, right? Like if you have the practice of how to regulate your breathing, that works great. And as well, if someone is really overstimulated or upset and they just want to grab something quick and it eliminates the I need to think through this step-by-step process. So it's like a faster and additional way to relax and kind of retrain your brain when it's in a stress state.
Thanks, Susan. It's so true. I mean, you know, often I'm so glad you bring up we have to practice ahead of time. I mean, it's great to have tools, but sometimes we normally forget about all this knowledge, right? And all this thing that we actually know how to calm ourselves down when we have a hard time. It's all out the window. Unless it's easier accessible, right? When we actually have made it a practice. And so any of you want to share, like, how can parents and kids perhaps even practice together? What are some routines folks can build? Go for it, Holly.
So I'll share that, you know, I've been teaching mindfulness for a long time, and I don't necessarily love to teach it to my own children. And I remember getting this advice from some other mindfulness teachers to maybe do it alongside them with a video of someone else, or, you know, I've taught it to my daughter's Girl Scout troop, and then she holds on to those lessons. But there's just something, you know, maybe it will work for you if you don't necessarily want to teach these tools, but just go into it as a learner with your child and say, let's just do this together, this video. And maybe the other ladies on here can offer some tangible resources for this. There's a few things I go to, but yeah, that I think that's my big advice, is like you can just learn alongside your child, and you don't have to feel the pressure to teach them anything. And I think they feel that a little more. They're happier to receive the learning.
So important, Holly. So important. I've heard from so many parents who come to me, is like, I need to teach my child mindfulness. I'm like, I don't think so. You can practice with your child, right? It's a totally different gig. And who does not, I mean, especially us parents, we don't have to be perfect. We don't need to know it all. We have to practice with the kids. We have to show up and say, the stuff is hard. I need a breath right now. Do you want to join me? Right? That kind of stuff will actually open up way more for the child. Yeah. I feel so much, and we go through this a lot, that parents are the nervous system of kids, right? And I feel like this cannot be said enough, because we as parents, and I'd love to hear your guys' opinion or experiences, but we as parents often want to fix and help the kids, right? So we're so kid-oriented. And again, we feel like we're the ones who need to have it all figured out. And I notice that I cannot support my child if I'm in a dysregulated state. So it takes so much discipline for me as a parent to be like, okay, my child is suffering, struggling. It's really affecting me. Okay, what's the choice? I have to take care of myself first. Or I'm addressing my child, and we take of each other. He's older now, so we're sitting down together and feeling a hard moment, and get to another moment or a transition somehow together, instead of like, I need to do it for you, right? So some of your suggestions or ideas or experiences you have about how we as parents can really nurture ourselves and regulate ourselves so we can then support our children?
Yeah, I think it's been said that, you know, mindfulness is simple but not easy. So, you know, you have to remember, you know, for your own mindfulness practice. And it's so important for the parent, the teacher. You know, I say all the time, the teacher's nervous system is the intervention in the classroom. They mirror neurons. They feel what you're holding on to. They feel what your body's holding. And of course, like was said before, it's important that we lay the groundwork with our kids so that when the hard times come, we have a history of what to do. So one thing that my family does is we have a gratitude text chain. And as often as we can, we just post, you know, what we're grateful for that day. And that calms the nervous system, you know, seeing what I'm grateful for, what they're grateful for. Another thing we like to do is sunsets. With little kids, maybe it's sunrises. With my older kids, it's sunsets. And just that shared, like, togetherness and that shared feeling in the moment of what's happening helps for when things get a little more difficult and challenging. So I think, like we had said, it's important to lay that mindfulness practice before something is, you know, super heavy. And then of course, modeling what I do when I'm feeling stressed, when I'm feeling worried, what my body's signaling, and then how I can use my breath, or maybe it's not the breath. Maybe it's, you know, a 5-4-3-2-1 strategy, like 5 things I see, 4 things I hear, 3 things I feel, 2 things I touch, 1 thing I taste. And just modeling that for your children at any age really goes a long way for when things get more difficult.
I love quick about what you just said, Melanie. I love all of these practices, and I would love to hear more about it too, so people can really take those home. But one way is not just constantly focus on, let's say we have anxiety about going back to school, but also like, how can we build up resources? How can we nurture the good, right? That gratitude text chain, or how can we celebrate the good moments and just weigh that more, right? And then also have the tools for the difficult moments. It's both, right? I love what you bring up. Yes, Holly, you had something to share there?
Yeah, I just love listening to Melanie talk about this because my kids are little and her kids are older, and we're on, you know, opposite parenting spectrums, but it's fun to have those things to look forward to. And I think, you know, my strategies in life are similar in modeling and giving myself a lot of forgiveness, because I'm working in a middle school, and the struggles there are way different than the struggles of my 6- and 4-year-old. And sometimes I just find myself like really being the least mindful person at home and trying to give myself forgiveness around these things and give myself forgiveness around like really small things that like, these are the things that give me anxiety about going back to school. Like if I forget that t-shirt she was supposed to wear, I'm going to be in school and I'm not going to be able to leave because I'm going to be supervising kids and I can't bring that t-shirt to her. And like, she'll be okay. Like Rebecca said, like, that's life. Like that scenario did happen and I felt terrible. She didn't have the right color t-shirt that day, but she said to me, okay, mommy, it's fine. Like what's her face didn't have it either. So she didn't have to be alone not having the right shirt. Like, it ruined my day, you know? And yeah, it's life and we're going to make mistakes and we can have forgiveness. And, you know, along with Melanie's strategies, like they don't have to be long things. Like I try to get to where I'm going. I tell myself I have to be there 5 minutes before I actually have to be there. I trick myself. And then I sit in my car and do some breathing. So they don't have to be long.
Yes. Especially for us parents, like there's time is short, especially if you're working, right? You have kids and you're working. It's like, when am I going to put a practice in? Forget it, right? No, we can. I love that. Little transitions. Breathe, like stay in the car for another moment. Yeah. Rebecca?
Something I've done with my family is at the dinner table, we'll practice like sharing highlights and lowlights of the day. So it's another way of kind of a little gratitude practice, but then you're also celebrating the low lights, like, yeah, this didn't go so well, and normalizing that, you know, it's normal to have things not go so well. I mean, how often do we come home at the end of the day and get stuck on the things that didn't go well, or the fears that we weren't good enough, or, I mean, that's really common. Those are really common things. And I wish I would have known that all my life until I'm 50, you know, like, oh, other people doubt themselves all the time too. Like that's normal. Or, other people feel like they're not good enough or not liked or not appreciated. So that's a really normal human condition. And I think labeling that like, oh, I'm kind of feeling like not only just the happy sads, but I'm kind of feeling doubtful or I'm feeling not good enough or that self-doubt and then reframing that like, oh, that's just a thought. You know, I mean, how many of our thoughts we have a day are not, do not come to fruition. They're not true. Thoughts are not facts, right? We just have all these thoughts that come in and can really ruin our day. Like you shared, ruining your day, thinking about your daughter, right? Like if you perseverate on that, you're feeling bad all day long because you messed up their day. And you know what? Didn't mess up her day at all, right? She was so resilient because you've taught her that, which, you know, we just have to remember that, you know, we're all human. And I think, I just want to share one quick thing about life with teenagers. I think I used to, in the beginning, you know, want to fix things when they didn't feel good or things went wrong. And I think this is in Dan Siegel's book, you know, like just let them have the feeling and let them know they're heard. Like, oh, that must be hard, right? Like we all just want to be heard and we all want to be understood. We don't want people necessarily fixing all our problems or all our big feelings. We can't. No one can really fix that. So why do we as parents feel like we have to fix it? I don't, it's just another human condition that's not really helpful. So, you know, just my, the biggest advice from that helped me so much was just to be like, oh, that's really hard. And it was like magic. The, you know, that must, you know, you must feel sad or that stinks or whatever it is and not say anything. And then the feelings pass. And then your teen turn, you know, like 2 minutes later is like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But when I've tried to fix it, it comes an argument and then it becomes butting heads. Right. And then it just escalates. And then you're on this hamster wheel of negativity and fear and trying to teach a lesson and they're not listening. And so, we have to learn to let it be, right? Learn to recognize our emotions, know that it's okay to have them, and be ready for the next great thing that might be happening. Open your eyes to the next prize, you know, the next good thing that's around the corner. Because emotions don't stay long. It's how we perseverate on them and think about them and talk about them.
What I hear so much from all of us or from all of you here is how important a connection is, right? The connection to the child, the connection to ourselves, and really emphasizing that. And out of that comes that support, that trust, that feeling held and heard, and not out of the fixing, right? But really out of showing up for ourselves as we are with everything that comes with it, with our mess ups, with our, you know, the whole thing. And then the same thing with the kid. And that can, for me, a lot of it actually has to do with self-confidence, the stuff of going back to school anxiety, right? The lack of self-confidence. And when we can just be with a child and say, wow, that stinks, right? Or, wow, this is hard. And really be there with that. That builds self-confidence, I think, right? Of like, oh, I can feel a hard feeling and I can be with that and I can be felt in that and then it will pass. Oh, I just survived that. Yeah, such a, those are such valuable points, yeah, and things to really practice. So I'm curious, I think one of the things for me go with like the, you know, the many years that I had to do the back to school transitions. Okay. First, that was growing up in Switzerland, we have 5 weeks of summer vacation. So here in the U.S., it's like forever. And I'm always like, everything goes out the other end. Like all the math skills are gone. All the sleep patterns are gone after like 2 or 3 months. I'm like, what is this good for? Right. So first I was always all like complaining about the long summers. But the question is how to get back into healthy habits. Right. So I'm kind of curious to hear from you. I think for me, that's always been like that a helpful thing to go back to healthy habits. So to make everything go smoother. What are some thoughts you guys have about that?
Yeah, I think sleep for especially middle schoolers and high schoolers is probably for any parents listening is the most important thing. My students report on the daily that they are just exhausted. So many kids are missing first period or not coming in till after lunch. They're absolutely zonked, so tired. One of the reasons I find that is because of social media and phones being left in their rooms at night. So there's one piece of advice I could give for kids that do have phones and are on social media, you know, at bedtime, set it downstairs, set it in a room that they're not sleeping in, and really create a routine for bedtime, which is, you know, the phone's down an hour at least, I think the research says, before bedtime. I love to have my essential oils going in my bedroom, maybe a meditation that you listen to, some deep breathing, and really just trying to get that sleep routine back on track, because that's going to be one of the best things that kids can do is show up to school not exhausted.
So important, Melanie. I have a question for you, because I can just hear some of my clients say, how do you reinforce that? Like with my teenager, they gave me so much trouble. I could never like have it, you know, take their phone away from them. Like, how do you reinforce that in a healthy way?
So it's hard if it wasn't established when you first gave your child a phone. When I gave my kids a phone going into middle school, there was a contract, a signed, sealed, delivered contract. And it was part of the terms. And if it's past that time and you have teenagers and you didn't start that and you're trying to figure out, like, I think I would look at my own practices. You know, where is my phone at 8 o'clock at night? Is the house, you know, still in chaos downstairs with TV blasting and, you know, activity and so much going on? Or are we winding down as a house, you know, as a whole? So I think I would model it. I would model the phone. And I'm sure it would be very difficult for some adults to put the phone down or to have like a phone lock box down in the kitchen and everyone's goes in there. But, you know, if this is what we want for our students and our children, you know, it's important to model that. That would be one suggestion.
Thank you, Melanie. Any other ideas about healthy habits? Yeah, Susan.
One of the things that has helped me, I know I've always struggled going to the gym. And really wanted to, but just it's hard for me to get there and do the thing and leave and do it regularly. But what I've learned recently is if you tie a habit that you want to cultivate to your identity more so than the outcome. So if you say to yourself, I'm the kind of person who doesn't miss a workout, so I'm going to go, and not like tie it to, I'm going to be there an hour, I'm going to be there an hour and a half, I have to do it Monday, Tuesday. Like, so it's not so rigid. If you kind of tie it to your values and what you want from the habit. So if I want to feel better, I know when I go to the gym, I feel better. Therefore, sometimes it's helpful for me to say, I'm the kind of person who doesn't want to miss going to the gym 2 or 3 times a week. So maybe like, try to keep it reasonable. And if you are the type of person who does well with a good night's sleep, I'm the type of person who prioritizes sleep and feels better when I rest well, you know, and just kind of take the pressure off. Because in the past, sometimes I would trip up by saying, I'm going to need med by 10:30, because it's not always the case, right? And then I would kind of say, oh, I failed because I didn't meet that expectation or outcome. But if I say to myself, I'm the type of person who wants to go to bed at a reasonable hour so I feel okay tomorrow, I have a better chance of sticking to the habit that I want to cultivate. If I can see myself as that person who values that thing, maybe.
Values, right? Yeah, I love that a lot, Susan. Yeah. So we have sleep. What about nutrition? Anybody ideas about how to go into healthy habits around food when it comes to going back to school? I mean, summer is kind of free for all, right? A little bit chaos, and we love it. And then going back to school is like, yeah, it's probably helpful if I have a more of a routine with my family.
This is a huge sense of anxiety for me, like going back to school, like the food. I think I obsessed over what lunchbox I was going to get my daughter for 4 hours. And then I had to acknowledge where that was coming from. You know, that was a thing I could control. I could control the lunchbox. I can't control who she's going to sit with and the atmosphere of the cafeteria and all that. But we're going to start trying to pack a lunch next week and try some things and see how they work, you know, while she'll eat when I'm there, you know. But it's a big sense of anxiety for me to be like, okay, I'm going to pack her this lunch and she's going to eat nothing, because that was last year. And, you know, she feels terrible and she is learning to acknowledge that. But I, you know, she's little. And but yeah, I think just starting, maybe we'll do this week and we're going to make what you're going to eat for lunch in school and see if I need to cut this up differently or, you know, things like that. That, you know, lunch is hard for kids in school. They only have, at our schools, they only have a half an hour, and like they get in there, they get the thing. Like I asked her why she didn't eat her lunch and she says, I didn't have time. And I know this from being in schools, like this happens, like they have 5 minutes to get that food in their mouth. And, it's hard. So that's a source of anxiety for me for sure.
Wow. I love that, Holly, of like noticing where the anxiety for you actually came from, right? Which then is a big aha for yourself. It's like, oh yeah, this is the only thing I can control. And the other thing I love, and I want to encourage folks to kind of play around with that a little bit of, yeah, try things out before school, right? Like lunches, great idea, right? You don't have to wait until the first day of school. Another thing, you know, that I was thinking of, even like if your child has a certain special anxiety, let's say, I don't know how to make friends, or what if the teacher doesn't like me? What if? Role play. Well, what could you do? What could you say? Let me be the teacher. Let me be this other child. Like, I think it helps us a lot when we can actually do something and not just be in the head about it, right? Because anxiety itself is really future orientation, and the thoughts just gone wild and they create their own reality that is absolutely not true because it's in the future and we have no idea how it is anyway. So yeah, making lunchboxes ahead of time. It's probably helpful for you and your child, right, Holly? Yeah, I'm figuring it out. What works? Excellent idea. Yeah. Rebecca?
I just heard you say try it on, and it reminded me of this great like thing to think about. When we're being mindful, we're just trying things on for size, right? So if you can liken that to trying on a new pair of shoes, okay? You put on it, or an outfit, right? You put on the shoes and you're like, how do these feel? How do these look? You walk around the store and you... Oh, is it comfortable? Am I fast? Will it stop me from falling? You know, like you don't get mad at the shoes. You don't worry about the shoes, right? So can you face, it's a little harder, but can you face, you know, uncertainty and that first day of school? Like, I'm just going to try it on. I'm just going to try it on for size. I'm going to try on this teacher. I'm going to try on this kid sitting next to me. I'm going to try on this lunch. And if it doesn't work for me, I'm going to note that and I'm going to move on, right? I'll embrace this and we'll move forward, or maybe I'll keep myself safe from this because it's hard. Maybe I'll talk to somebody about this because it really doesn't feel right. You know, because there are a lot of normal anxieties that we feel. And that's maybe one other thing that we could just touch base on. And I'm not the specialist necessarily, but is just noticing like what's normal anxiety and when should you be talking to a counselor, right? like, because we kind of live in a low grade anxiety country, you know, like, I guess some people would say that any institution you're in, you know, there's just a chronic low grade anxiety, and schools are one of those. You know, it's fast paced. There's lots going on. There's lots of transitions. Every time we transition, it causes us to, you know, have to react. So being able to move through transitions, I think, is really hard for some kids more than others. Some people enjoy the adventure and some people really struggle. So if anyone else wants to speak to any of that.
Yeah, Susan?
Well, it makes me think of kids who sometimes come to school and they say, oh, you know, my mom didn't ask me about this lunch and I didn't have time to talk to her this morning and all those things. Like, if you take the time to kind of talk about the transitions throughout the day and what to expect, I think it's like a really good investment to avoid the surprises that when a child opens a lunchbox and isn't ready for what's there and expected something else, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then I'll often say to kids, like, well, you know, make sure you bring this home and tell mom or dad that you don't like it, because they're going to keep sending it if you don't have the conversation. Because they often, like, kids will often tell the teacher, I don't like this. This is not something I signed up for, kind of. And it always kind of makes me wish that those conversations were had either the night before or the morning of. And I know it's busy and hectic, and but it's always time well spent, you know, just giving kids a little heads up about what's in their lunchbox or what's in their lunch bag or what they might need after school in the lunch bag or in you know, the school bag. Conversations.
Yeah. Like, conversations, right? Yeah. You all, we're already coming to the end of the show. It's gone so fast. I'm so grateful for you all to be willing to be here, have this conversation. I really hope folks got a lot out of it. Let's just make a quick roundabout for you to be able, if you have any resources you like to share with the community, please go for it. And just, yeah, perhaps a departing word. We have about 2 minutes left. Melanie.
Thanks. I have some great resources at my website, www.sliceofmindfulness.com. You can get 5 mental health strategies if you're a teacher or even a parent to use with your kids, downloadable, quick and fast. And I also have meditations on Insight Timer, specifically for teachers or anyone who provides support for others. So I invite you to go there. And thank you so much for inviting me for this. I loved it.
Thank you, Melanie. Sliceofmindfulness.com, right? Thanks for that resource. Mm-hmm. And thanks for being here. What a pleasure. Yeah, go for it, Rebecca.
Thank you for having us. This was really fun. I guess my biggest advice is to just self-care for parents and know that it's all going to be okay. And modeling, your modeling is what's really going to go the furthest. So have the best school year and know that we're all learning all the time, and provide grace and space for whatever comes. Thank you.
Great advice, Rebecca. Thank you so much for being here. Yeah, Holly, last words.
Oh, I'll just sign out. Thank you for having me. It was really great to hear all of this and participate. I'll just say, have some fun with your kids. Yeah, dance around, do some silly, goofy things.
Love it. Yes, Holly, lots of that. Yeah.
Thank you so much, and best of luck with the new school year.
Thank you, Susan. Wow, I'm so grateful for you ladies. For sharing your wisdom, your presence, your ideas. What a great time to be together. Yeah, and I'm Florina. You can find me on florinanickley.com. I have some resources up there too, so check that out. All right, signing off. Thank you, Kmud.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.